Plant polyphenols, such as urine alfalfa, act also as antioxidants for ascorbic acid and therefore are protective in the diabetic individual, especially in their retinas and the other small vessels located elsewhere. Neuropathy in diabetics is often associated with pain and paresthesia or numbness. And diabetics with this condition are lower in vitamin B6, according to the research in the Australian and New Zealand Journal of Medicine. On 50 milligrams of B6 TID, most patients improve with less pain, less numbness, and they state that their eyes feel better. This particular vitamin B6 that should be used is what they call the active form or pyridoxal 5-phosphate. That is available through Thorne and should be taken at about 50 milligrams 3 times a day. If you take a lot more, you will get very vivid dreams and you won't like them because they can start getting to be angry dreams. People who have a lot of grease around the nasal fold tend to be low in that active form of vitamin B6. Within 3 weeks of stopping their B6, the former symptoms returned, and you find that in the Journal of American Podiatry Association. Women with what they call gestational diabetes, are those who had these very large babies at birth, frequently have a B6 deficiency. And according to the British Medical Journal, 100 milligrams daily leads to their improvement, which would be 2 a day. B1 or thiamine in a 2-week trial and given at 100 milligrams daily showed that 80% or was followed by 80% of the diabetics improving in terms of their neuropathy in a decrease of pain and numbness. That was the American Diabetic Association journal where that was reported. Here note that broad spectrum B1 is synergistic with other Bs, and you should not be taking the synthetic form of any vitamin or mineral where you have a choice. When it comes to B12 or cyanocobalamin, it was found that years ago this vitamin was an aid in diabetic neuropathy. This was reported in the Annals of Internal Medicine in 1951, in the Journal of Florida Medical Association 1954. But more recently, Batt and his group, that's B-H-A-T-T, had an article printed in The Lancet, that journal that's reported to be the greatest in the entire world in terms of medical reporting, that was entitled, "Can faulty cobalamin metabolism produce diabetic neuropathy?" So what they noted was that diabetics on metformin, or glucophage, had an advantage in not putting on weight as other diabetic drugs do. But metformin, or glucophage, can lead to a decrease in vitamin B12 and folic acid. So again, it appears that the diabetic is very wise to have a good source of vitamin B complex. Low calcium and vitamin D intake, or shortened exposure to sunlight and therefore less vitamin D synthesis, or using of sunscreens all the time, all can contribute to calcium deficiency. And this is why calcium and vitamin D are excellent together, since the vitamin D receptor sites must be filled for you to absorb the proper amount of calcium. This is particularly important in those 40 years and up. In Japan, this condition is felt to be the number one cause of diabetes, which you will find in the Journal of Nutrition Science and Vitaminology printed in Tokyo. I should note that if your calcium intake is too low or the absorption from your intestines is too low because your receptor sites for vitamin D are not filled, because you haven't taken your vitamin D capsules, then calcium will be pulled from the bones. It will be elevated near bone sites because it's being pulled out of them and therefore taken up by the hair, and you may find that as a consequence hair calcium might be high, simply because it's been pulled out of the bones. As it's pulled out of the bones, too, this can form the so-called heel spurs that we see. And for this reason, elevated hair calcium levels are suggestive of a calcium deficiency, and of course, so are bone spurs, those very painful heel things. And the treatment for this is calcium magnesium with vitamin D. In a study by Tamari and Roma in the journal Cytobiology Review, 60% of 118 diabetics having abnormal glucose tolerance tests all had elevated hair calcium levels. Since vitamin D is absolutely necessary for the absorption of calcium, diabetics need both calcium and vitamin D. Chromium is a factor also needed to help control blood sugars. Glucose intolerance is the number one sign of a chromium deficiency. This mineral is a necessary component of glucose tolerance factor known as GTF. Your chromium, if you're a diabetic, must be GTF chromium. Supplementation of this mineral may improve glucose intolerance and diabetic neuropathy. And this is by Gigi Boy and his group. Interestingly here, B3 or niacin is safe for a diabetic when it is given with chromium. Iron is poorly controlled in type 2 diabetes. And this is part of the rationale for cutting down the amount of red meat eaten because it's a high iron product. Manganese is high in nuts, and it's a cofactor in enzymes that break blood sugar down, which is what we want. A deficiency of manganese, or of nuts, can lead to glucose intolerance. It would have to be a major deficiency, of course, but supplements of this mineral will reverse the problem. This is noted in the Journal of Nutrition. Now, zinc in some diabetic is not well absorbed from the intestinal tract. It applies particularly to type 2 diabetics. In supplementing, remember to give it with A, since vitamin A and zinc are synergistic, and vitamin A is required for healthy retina. And so, if you remember, retina disease is very common in diabetics. You should know also that beta-carotene cannot be converted to vitamin A by a diabetic, so they require the animal form of vitamin A, or that which is taken from fish. The animal prostate contains high zinc levels, and tests done by Song et al. In the journal Diabetic Research showed a greater absorption of zinc when prostate extract was given. This is significant since plasma zinc levels are low in diabetics, and this is associated with reduced pancreatic insulin content and potency. A recent report to the author regarding a patient on what's known as Prozen-GL-PHP, which stands for prostate, zinc, so on, effectively reduced her blood sugar levels greatly, and I would imagine would do the same in a man. And here we have studies on animal prostate extract ameliorates diabetic symptoms by stimulating intestinal zinc absorption. However, it was done in animals rather than in human beings. However, when they did it in human beings, fortunately, they got the same results. As a matter of fact, fasting urinary blood sugars, given this Pro-Z, as they call it, Pro-Z, decreased from 1,249 to 378 when they were given just a few micrograms of this prostate extract. Supplemented with bovine prostate powder, supplemented with 20 milligrams of zinc per day, improved the clinical condition of older men with type 2 diabetes as well. Well, what are some of the other factors? One of them is coenzyme Q10, that substance that's used for over 10 million congestive heart patients as a prescription from doctors, with another 10 million noting how much it improved them going on it by themselves without going to the doctors in Japan. Coenzyme Q10 blood levels tend to be low in diabetics. At 60 milligrams daily for 3 months, both insulin synthesis, in other words, the production of insulin, and its secretion was promoted. This is research done in Japan by Shimura and Hagimoto. Other studies utilizing this enzyme reduced fasting blood sugar levels by at least 20%. And that was Shigeta et al. In diabetes, as well as other diseases, and such as AIDS particularly, but definitely not relating the two, one must rule out hydrochloric acid deficiencies. These we tend to rule out rather easily by simply asking the patient, have you ever had heartburn? And many patients will say, I've heard of it, but I don't know what it is. Those people almost invariably are low on their hydrochloric acid. Others will say, oh yeah, I sure know heartburn, I get it quite regularly. In studies done by Jocelyn and his group, or et al., a review of 8 studies, the average incidence of achlorhydria was 32.8% in the general population, particularly because he included the aged as well as young people. So it's important that if you have this, then we use glutamic acid hydrochloride supplement, which is available through a company by the name of Thorne, T-H-O-R-N-E, and it's called BioGest. Now we'll get to some herbs in the treatment of this disease called diabetes. And we'll also throw in a few other things as we go along. But one of the factors I would mention that a master herbalist friend of the speaker's has found the use of a tablespoon of raw beet juice twice a day being highly effective in controlling blood sugars. While I'm mentioning certain factors that will minimize the highs in high blood sugar, I must mention that 3/8 of a teaspoon of cinnamon taken twice a day is an excellent product in lowering peaks of blood sugar, which a person wants to avoid because they have long-term bad side effects. I might give you a warning here, and that is this: whatever you do, don't do what this writer did and throw a teaspoon of dried cinnamon powder in his mouth to be followed by a glass of water. That is so choking a factor that I literally thought I was going to be found dead in the morning by the sink by my wife. Put it on a little piece of bread or whole wheat bread, or mix it in with something, but whatever you do, do not just throw it back in your mouth because it can kill. So I look at cinnamon powder now with a jaundiced eye. Well, aloe vera is one of the herb products that has been noted and given to a number of type 2 diabetics. You remember that is the maturity onset diabetics, as a dried sap, and that is the aloe vera, not the diabetic, at only a half a teaspoon per day. What were the results? The mean glucose levels of 273 fell to, get this, 151 milligrams per deciliter, a phenomenal decrease in the blood sugar levels. Excellent to think of that anything could be that effective. Bilberry is the next herb we'll mention, and diabetics suffer a thickening of capillaries for two reasons. The first reason that their capillaries are thickened is that they have what is known as an increased polymeric collagen. Now, all that is saying, when it says poly is the Greek word for many and meric for the word parts. So they have increased collagen in many parts. The second reason that the capillaries for a diabetic get thicker, and remember these are the small blood vessels supposedly giving you the nutrition to your cells, is that they have an increased glycoprotein synthesis. What does this mean? This means that the diabetic has an increase in compounds that are composed or a mixture of sugars and proteins. And these are manufactured in high amounts. And in the manufacturing of these in the body, they tend to result in the thickening of these little capillaries. Now, when they took and did a study on diabetics with this problem, they noticed that 500 to 600 milligrams per day of bilberry, and taken for 8 to 33 months, that these people manifested almost normal, what they call polymeric collagen. And they had a decrease in their glycoprotein synthesis of 30%. So both of the reasons for diabetics having thickened capillaries and therefore cutting down their blood supply to their organs was solved by taking bilberry at the amounts that we'd already noticed. The other thing that's interesting is that bilberry also decreases diabetic retinopathy. This is a terrible situation where the diabetic slowly have bleeds in their retina, where little blood vessels pop and a little bit of blood comes out. And the usual treatment is putting them under laser beam to weld that area where the leak is. However, when you've had hundreds of weld jobs, eventually all you have is the scar tissue remaining, and welding your bleeding blood vessels in the back of the eye will eventually, if you have enough welding, produce blindness by itself. Significant thing here is that bioflavonoids that used to be called vitamin P for permeability tighten up the blood vessels so they don't bleed as easy. And I personally have had diabetics with as many as 11 bleeds a day for weeks suddenly stop their retinal bleeding or those small bleeds in the back of the retina in less than 48 hours. And it put a dead end to their need for laser welding, as I call it, back there. And the reason that bilberry is effective in decreasing this retinopathy is because bilberry is also high in bioflavonoids. I don't know whether you've heard of fenugreek, but fenugreek is a substance they use frequently as a tea. And what we've noticed about fenugreek over the years is that it reduces blood sugar, particularly in type 2 diabetics, so it helps to bring it down. Another advantage is that diabetics tend to have a higher cholesterol reading and a higher blood fats, and fenugreek also tends to normalize these serum lipids in the diabetic as well. Now that we're speaking of serum lipids, and that's the fats in your blood vessels, it's been found that niacin will correct a lot of problems in diabetics that have high serum lipids. The diabetic tends to have much higher bad cholesterol, lower good cholesterol, much higher triglycerides, and as a consequence has a much higher incidence of heart attack, higher incidence of stroke, higher incidence of kidney failure, and so on. In order to bring those fats down that are highly responsible for this higher incidence of sickness and mortality, it's been discovered that niacin will increase the low level of the good cholesterol, namely the HDL, and it decreases particularly the largest fats in the bloodstream called triglycerides. It also helps tremendously in peripheral arterial disease. And we've already mentioned on the tapes that in major hospitals throughout the whole of Canada, they're almost taking a leg off every day of some unfortunate diabetic. So anything that is going to prevent you from losing your legs is well worth it. We've already mentioned vitamin E when it came to gangrene. And that should be a broad spectrum vitamin E. And now, of course, we're talking about niacin. Now, it doesn't matter whether you use the 50 milligram, excepting that you will get a flushing. And it feels like a hot sunburn for about 10 minutes or so following. And a lot of people think they're having an allergy reaction. You do not have the allergy reaction with the, if you're having the flushing. It is a result of the release of histamine, which causes flushing in your system, and it also causes the opening of your blood vessels. So niacin can be taken at 50 milligrams. It's best taken after a meal, and you tend not to flush nearly as much. The other thing is it can be taken in the form of, and this is another thorn product, called niacetol. It's a combination of niacin at 500 milligram plus inositol, which prevents the flushing. And it tends to pull down the bad fats in your bloodstream and bump them up. It'll bump up the, when I say bump them up, not the bad ones, but bump up the good ones. It can increase your good cholesterol by approximately 29% and pull down the triglycerides for an average of about 25%. Marvelous product. Although it does raise the blood sugar slightly, it has been found to be much safer than the statins they're using now, which have some very serious effects. It is particularly effective, that is the niacin, in slowing down the rate at which you'll get peripheral artery disease, and therefore you will end up walking on your own legs a lot longer than normal if you didn't take it. It's rather interesting that taking the niacin or the niacetol, that the lipoprotein response, in other words, the increase of your good cholesterol and the lowering of those triglycerides, is not affected by the presence of obesity. In other words, even though you're chubby, let's say, to be kind, then the niacin still works well in helping you out. And I might mention the chubbier people, of course, have a much higher incidence of diabetes in those who are not chubby. Occasionally, taking niacin at a good level will give a person gout. So it's not just wine, women, and song. It can be wine, women, and song, and occasionally niacin that will give you gout. And I'd imagine singing, since it boosts the immune system, they could cut that one out. So now we're down to wine, women, and niacin. And I'm not sure what aspect of women, other than we do know that stress will give some people a real problem in control of their diabetes. Which reminds me of a little ad that we saw in the paper not too long ago, where a man says, for sale, complete set of Encyclopedia Britannica, $1,000, will negotiate, reason for sale, recently married, wife knows everything. I don't know how long that marriage is going to last. Before we finish with the advantages of niacin, I might just note that niacin has been shown to reduce not only the morbidity, but mortality that results from atherosclerotic disease of the blood vessels, which means, of course, that you're not going to be as sick and the funeral isn't going to be faster than what we want it to be, okay? Now, garlic and onions, both lower blood sugar. It appears that insulin has an effect on certain liver sites, and garlic and onions compete for these sites, resulting in an increase of insulin in the bloodstream since it's not tied up at the liver. And therefore, there's less required for treatment of diabetes by the patient. This is work done by Bever and Zand. Now, in saying this, I might note that the garlic has an interesting effect. It is known as an adaptogen. An adaptogen has the effect, or garlic has as an adaptogen, has the effect of lowering the high peaks of blood sugars that are way too high and raising the low peaks that are way too low, which tells us that the garlic has a tendency of stabilizing your blood sugar at a more normal level. If you take certain brands, you can find them out there that definitely do not give you garlic breath or garlic odor to your perspiration. And they mixed with parsley, of course, which has been known for years to help prevent that problem. Another herb is ginkgo biloba. That's given to lab animals and been found to protect against retinopathy. And if you stop and think a minute, ginkgo has been known to increase circulation. So where you increase circulation in the back of the retina, you should not be bothered with as much retinal problems that would otherwise occur. One of the things that diabetics frequently suffer from, of course, is impotence. And that can be quite a major thing. And since ginkgo biloba with ginseng combination, it's an excellent product that you can recommend, or that I can recommend. And since it increases the circulation, not only in the brain and the back of the eyes, it increases it everywhere. And so sometimes that makes quite a benefit. But impotence is going to be another talk on another tape. Burdock root. Now, I'm going to give you a list of them here, but burdock root, dandelion root, and Jerusalem artichokes contain a substance called inulin. Okay? That's a fructose-like sugar. It aids in blood sugar control. And if you take it as a tea, that's all three of them together, with a meal, it will lower the blood sugar levels that would normally occur following that meal. Research by USDA, that's the United States District of Agriculture, these boys use a tremendous number of subjects when they're doing the research. And they've indicated an unusual but economical treatment for raised blood sugar, which we already mentioned to you in the form of a level, incidentally, 3/8 of a teaspoon for a big person, only a quarter of a teaspoon for someone weighing less than 150 pounds of cinnamon, which you take A and M, but as again, give you the warning, don't throw it directly into your mouth alone, because it'll choke you to death, or has the potential to do that, and you will be alarmed if you ever make that mistake. Now, what have they found, what's been found in this area, which is in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, a particularly effective method for lowering high blood sugar in people living west of this area and north of this area, is blueberry leaf tea. And the reason I mention this area is that we live in the area where blueberries grow. This is a close relative to the bilberry that was previously mentioned. And the leaves are readily available, often up until the snow covers it. which can be, as it was this month, in the latter part of November. Now, here is something that really should be put together, and the writer is presently trying to get somebody to do this. And that is that if you use a combination of burdock root, sheep sorrel, Turkish rhubarb root, slippery elm bark, milk thistle leaf, red clover flower, watercress, kelp, sarsaparilla root, licorice root, peach bark, prickly ash bark, echinacea, rosemary, in some blue-green algae. Now that's a big, long list. But when done, I have in front of me now a chart of a patient who actually did that. And he was on Legend T, which contains a lot of those that I have mentioned, was monitoring the blood sugars, and he started drinking this tea at the time when he was taking insulin twice a day at a fair heavy level. He was on the snacks required in the evening and so on. But after 18 days, he stopped taking snacks, and he found he didn't need to because his blood sugar levels were staying in a normal dosage. At 24 days, he was able to discontinue his insulin dose. He was dropping it down from the third day, and by the time he had ceased his AM dose, he was, instead of taking 46 units of insulin a day, he was now only taking, let me have a look here on the chart, he was taking 22 units a day. When 30 days had gone by, he was now only taking 11.5 units of insulin daily, still remaining within a normal blood sugar curve, which he was testing daily as well. His last insulin dose was 40 days after starting the drink of tea, and actually you'd have to subtract from that 5. So it was really 35 days, 36 days, exactly 36 days after last insulin use, and has never utilized insulin since. So this is a most intriguing chart, and I'm presently trying to get a big herb company to put together that. But if they don't do it, then I think this writer is going to have to get and do that himself. Now, although it's not in a herb, I want to mention vitamin D use. Vitamin D is readily available in halibut liver oil, and for adults, I like capsules because the last bit of halibut liver oil that we have been tasting here has been a bit on the rancid side. But what has been found is this. Even if a pregnant mother was taking some cod liver oil, and don't take that in the first 3.5 months of pregnancy, there are some bad side effects on the fetus if you're taking high levels of vitamin A or any fat-soluble vitamin for that matter within the first 3.5 months of pregnancy. You're better to wait till the end of the 4th and then you're home free. But women who were taking cod liver oil in the last, let's say, 4.5 months of their pregnancy will have children who have a much decreased risk of ever becoming diabetic. And that's particularly important if you women have had a previous pregnancy and that baby weighed close to 9 pounds or more, because it's a fact that that's a pre-diabetic condition, as we've mentioned earlier on. Vitamin D that is in cod liver oil or in a halibut liver oil capsule taken by a pregnant mother or pregnant mother-to-be will lower the risk of type 1 or the juvenile onset diabetes in her children quite significantly. It has been found that children who receive vitamin D supplementation regularly, the risk of getting juvenile diabetes is reduced by about 80%, which is a tremendous decrease of risk and well worth giving these youngsters a vitamin D supplement. It's rather interesting that in Finland, that has the highest incidence of juvenile diabetes in the world, that vitamin D was allowed in the 1960s at quite a level. In 1964, however, the recommended dose was reduced from 4,000 to 5,000 international units to 2,000 international units per day. And in 1975, the vitamin D was further reduced to 1,000 international units. And in 1992, the dose was reduced again to 400 international units. Well, now that was in 1992. During the 1980s, when it had been reduced to the 1,000 already in 1975, an increase in the frequency of rickets, which is a vitamin D deficiency, occurred in Finland. We might also note there was a significant increase in the incidence of type 1 juvenile diabetes once the amount was dropped to the 1,000 and then again to the 400. This is rather sad, because why they're saying that vitamin D is toxic is because it does have an immunosuppressive effect. And since type 1 diabetes is believed to be an autoimmune disease, because people given cow's milk early in life instead of being breastfed do have a higher incidence of juvenile diabetes. And it's because the milk has a similar molecular structure to the cells in the pancreas. And as a result of this, a sick immune system makes antibodies to the milk and cannot tell the difference between the milk and the islet cells. Vitamin D tends to pull down that antigen antibody response. Matter of fact, it was Baumgartel and his colleagues that reported that concentrations of vitamin D in serum measured throughout the year are lower in patients newly diagnosed with the juvenile onset or type 1 diabetes. I might mention that if you go out in the sunshine in your diapers or in your bikini if you're a little older or your bathing suit, that within 15 minutes in the sunshine, you have manufactured far more than the maximum levels of vitamin D that the average individual would take as a supplement. Well, as we noted, the body itself makes a tremendous amount of vitamin D, far more than the daily allowances and even the maximum daily allowances. And what's interesting to note that I might say that when babies are born with rickets, there are three drugs that are given, and I'll give you the American names, Dalsol, Deltalon, andristol, all of which contain 50,000 international units of vitamin D per unit given, and that these are given to babies daily for quite some period of time by pediatricians to cure the rickets. I'll also say, rather interesting to note, that the College of Medicine at the University of Chicago years ago did a study of vitamin D with 773 humans and 64 dogs. And this was done by a Dr. Streck, a Dr. Deutsch, a Dr. Reed, a Dr. Strzok, and in their study, they concluded, and I will quote, "Both human subjects and dogs generally survive the administration of 20,000 international units of vitamin D, get this, not per day per person, but per kilogram of body weight per day for indefinite periods without intoxication," unquote. As you can realize, this is a tremendous amount of vitamin D, and since vitamin D is a fat-soluble product, I would wonder about going up that high. However, I must admit that I have not tested 773 subjects and 64 dogs for a long period of time and to find out that they didn't have any bad side effect. But it is worthy of noting that on the basis of a 110-pound woman, and from what they say, she could take 1 million units daily. They did find something else, however, in the study, and that was that massive doses of vitamin D as high as 500,000 international units per kilogram per day, which was equivalent to 25 million units of vitamin D a day, over 62,000 times the RDA for a woman weighing 125 pounds, that this might in fact cause death. However, they also state that both the cell injury and calcium deposits resulting from this massive amount are both reversible and repairable if the administration is discontinued promptly. And I would suggest that you discontinue it before you start at those kind of levels. My whole point in bringing this up, of course, is that I am not convinced regarding the toxicity of vitamin D, as is presently noted not only in Finland, but also in this country. I have routinely put patients on much more vitamin D. I've routinely taken this myself, and presently taking a minimum of 1,600 international units daily, which is nothing if I was out in the sunshine for 15 minutes with my bathing suit on. I would be getting a lot more than that made in my skin. Okay, let's have a bit of a summary on this matter of diabetes. We have covered the two types of diabetes and the fact that about 1 out of 20 Canadians have this disease. We've also noted that poorly controlled diabetes shortens life expectancy by about 1/3. Additionally, it was estimated that about 750,000 people in Canada have diabetes and don't even know it. It was stated that the leading cause of death in diabetics is related to cardiovascular disease. And the effects of the Western diet and lifestyle on populations was touched upon.